your name, spit in the
Translation, those who have full knowledge of self-realization, those who know very well the spirit soul's eternal worth, body is perishable, are not overwhelmed by lamentation. The persons who lack knowledge of self-realization certainly lament. Therefore, it is difficult to educate a person in illusion. So, here, the statement is that a person in knowledge does not lament in this world for the temporary or the permanent. Is that a person in knowledge does not lament over the temporary material body which will die, nor does he lament for the soul because it's eternal. So there's no cause for lamentation for the permanent or the temporary, because the temporary is not you and the permanent is you and it's never destroyed, so there's no lamentation there. But if you think you're the body, then you must lament. So, this is a very basic fact mentioned in the scriptures. You'll see this at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. You're not the body, but you're the soul, therefore do not lament. And you think you're wise or pandita, but you're lamenting because you think in terms of material bodies. So this is a basic teaching in the Vedic literature. And generally it is accepted by those who accept the Vedas. So, of course, we have different philosophers like the Sankhya philosophers, Kapila, etc. Generally, they will accept this difference. But surprisingly enough, we'll find people who are still convinced that we don't have to get out of the body in spite of all this knowledge. So that's the, Prabhupada mentions these karma mimamsakas. They think that, yes, you can be eternally happy in the material world. You don't have to leave your body or whatever. Certainly, all you have to do is pious activities and go to Svargaloka and then you're eternal. So that's their solution. Of course, we know that they can quote scriptures for this, because some places it says that you go to Svargaloka and you get eternal happiness. So this is what they'll quote. But we'll see that the others, all the other philosophies like yoga and Nyayikas, Gautama's Nyaya and others, they will generally reject this, and they'll say that actually you have to separate the body from the soul. And this is called liberation. And we'll find the same concept not only in Vedic philosophy, we'll find that in Jain philosophy also, and Buddhist philosophy. They all accept that. The difference between soul and body, etc. And you separate yourself from the body. So it is not a surprising conclusion. Many, many people accept it. There are some philosophies, however, that have a little confusion over this completely. And they don't really distinguish between body and soul or whatever. Some religions are like that. But very definitely we find in the Vedas, Upanishads, Puranas, Bhagavad Gita, that it's clear understanding that the Atma, or the soul, is completely different from the body. And that if you want to get peace, you have to not identify with this material body, which is caused by ahankara. So somehow you have to destroy that ahankara. So this is one of the endeavors of the people who follow the Vedas. Let us try to get rid of this concept of I am, this body, etc. And the result of doing that is called liberation, or mukti, or moksha. So artha, dhamma, and kama are for people who want to stay in the material world. And it's also in the Vedas. Methods of becoming happy in the material world. And this is what the karma mimamsakas follow. Karma yogis follow this also. And those who are going for liberation, moksha, those are the jnanis and the yogis. Jnana yoga and astanga yoga. So, they understand I'm not the body, I'm the soul. So, their focus is different from those who are doing karma in the material world. So, all of these are, both these are in the Vedas. So that's as far as many people go. Either they're karma yogis or the jnana yogis. Stay in the material world and go to Svargaloka, or get liberation from the material world. So this is called the path of Pravritti Marga, staying in the material world, making some adjustments through piety and enjoying as much as you can. And Nirvritti Marga, renouncing the whole thing and getting liberation. No more material body, no more birth and death. Two paths are there. But this actually is not complete. That's not a complete system. So Artha, Dharma, Kama, and Moksha are there. But then there is a fifth principle, and that is called Prema. That means pure love of the Supreme Lord. So though most people will only accept these four principles, the Vedas actually indicate something else. That is the fifth principle. That is Prema. So prema is achieved by bhakti yoga, not by karma or jnana or astanga yoga. So it is quite different in nature. So, as I said, the philosophy of staying in the material, of course, is lower, and getting moksha is considered higher. We end the process of birth and death. The process of bhakti also ends the process of birth and death. So that's common to both. So in that sense, we escape from material suffering as well. But the process of bhakti is complete process, because it recognizes not only that you're different from the material body, that you're Atma, but it also recognizes the Supreme Lord, Paramatma, or Parameshwara. So the complete knowledge is when we have acceptance of the Supreme Lord as well as acceptance of the Atma. And based on this, we do bhakti yoga and we have the highest achievement, that is prema, not just liberation. So a first step is there in the sense of identifying yourself as not the body. And if we don't do that, then of course people are simply attached to the material world and they lament in the material world. And a common symptom of the material world is this lamentation. They must lament for their departed ancestors, fathers, mothers, children, etc. So as immediate solution, understanding not the material body. And this is the jnana part of it. So this is usually presented first as knowledge. And we'll find whole sections of the Upanishads dealing with this temporary nature of the material world, you're not the material body, etc. But we should not conclude that that's final. Just like if you're in the climbing up some stairs, you go up the first step, then you go up the second step, then you go up the third step, fourth step. So you don't stop in the middle of the stairs on the third step or something and then stay there. No, you go to the top of the stairs, maybe fifth step, sixth step, seventh step, eighth step. You go the whole process. So yes, understanding you're the Atma and not the body is superior to staying in the material world and making some adjustment through punya. But it's not the complete process. It's only one step. So therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna clearly gives these different processes. Karma Yoga is less. Jnana Yoga is superior. Astanga Yoga is superior to that. And Bhakti Yoga is superior to that. And there's nothing beyond that. Nothing superior to Bhakti Yoga. So we have steps. Step one is Karma Yoga. Bottom step. Second step is Jnana Yoga. Third step is Astanga Yoga. Final step is Bhakti Yoga. Nothing beyond that. So therefore, the realization that you get through Bhakti is the highest. That's the actual goal. So there are two methods of coming to Bhakti. And that is why we have all these different processes. We have a gradual process. Purify yourself through Karma Yoga. And come through the gunas from tamogun to sattva-guna. Then you are qualified for jnana yoga. And when you understood everything properly, then you engage in trying to realize Atma through the practical process of astanga yoga. Once you've understood you're not the material body, then you go to bhakti yoga and understand Supreme Lord when you practice that. This is called the gradual process. So this was recommended in some ages, but it takes many, many births to do this. To go from tamoguna to sattvaguna takes many, many births in the varnashram system. And then to get jnana and yoga, there's many births also. Yogis may spend thousands of years doing their practices. So it's a very slow process. This is one method, gradual method. That's why all the processes are there. Other method is simply do bhakti yoga and ignore karma yoga, jnana yoga, sangha yoga. Obviously, it's a quicker process. The problem is, how do we get to bhakti yoga without having to go through all these other steps? How do we get to the top step without going through the step one, step two, step three? We've got to jump. That's a little difficult. So therefore, some people will just, no, we can't do that. And we have to go gradual process. But we see that the scriptures also say, no, you can also do bhakti yoga directly. And even an unqualified person who has very sinful activities in karma, which puts them in a very low birth as a mlecha or a chandala, he can also do bhakti yoga. So this is the mysterious nature of bhakti, that even though it's the topmost, people who are at the bottom can also do it. So it's a very different process from these other processes that require qualifications. So therefore in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Striyo Vaishya Sudras Tevya Adiparamgati. Even women, Vaishya Sudras, etc. can do it. Not only Sudras, in Bhagavatam, Chandalas also can do it. So that means anybody can do the process of bhakti, any guna. So, therefore, in spite of the fact that it's the highest, one can go from the lowest stage and practice bhakti and go upwards. So, just as one elevates oneself from karma yoga to jnana yoga to sangha yoga, then do bhakti yoga. We do bhakti yoga, start at the bottom, and we elevate ourselves only through bhakti yoga. So it is the bhakti yoga process that takes you from tamoguna to sattvaguna to beyond the gunas. How does it do that? It does that because bhakti is nirguna in itself. It destroys all the gunas. Karma yoga is in rajaguna, so it raises you from tamoguna to rajaguna, basically. And then you do nishkama karma yoga, without desires. Then you get up to sattvaguna. Then jnana yoga and astanga yoga and sattvaguna. So they raise you to the top of sattvaguna. And that's as far as you get. So bhakti yoga is nirguna. So it can destroy it. Tamagun, rajagun, and sattvaguna. All three get destroyed. Because it is nirguna. It is beyond the gunas. So this means that bhakti is more powerful than the other process. Other processes are localized. They just deal with guna, a little one guna here, one guna there. And they raise you through a guna. Bhakti yoga destroys all the gunas completely. So it is recommended process. So it is complete in itself. It does not need karma yoga or varnashram, etc., or jnana to pull you through the gunas and get you from tamoguna to rajaguna to sattvaguna. It doesn't require that. Independent process. And therefore it's also quicker. It's a powerful process and it does not take all these many practices of karma, many lifetimes of karma yoga, then jnana yoga and astanga yoga. One process which is very quick. Why is it quick? It's quick because not only is it nirguna, it's non-different from the Supreme Lord Himself. Which means that bhakti yoga invokes the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And therefore, the Lord can very quickly deliver that person who takes to bhakti. So therefore, bhakti is a complete process. It takes you through all the gunas without dependence on any of the process. It invokes the mercy of the Lord. So it's a quicker process. And it is easier because it doesn't require you to switch from one method to another, learn all the karma yoga and go through all the sacrifices, etc., then give that up and get jnana and study Vedanta and austerities, and then learn the Sangha yoga process. So you have to learn three processes before you get to bhakti. So bhakti yoga, you don't have to do that. It's one process all the way through. So the same effort is not required. In that sense, it's an easier process. Not so much effort. So, therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions after giving all these processes, Arjuna asks the question, which is better? To do the process that leads to jnana, that is, go through karma yoga, jnana yoga, and this, and then realize atma, or simply to do bhakti? And then Krishna says, better to do bhakti. It is easier and it is quicker. And it's the final result anyway. And therefore, just do bhakti yoga. This is in chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita. This is repeated at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, where he says, Sava Dharma Paritya Mami Kam Sharanam Braja. Give up all of the dharmas, all of the practices, and just surrender unto me, surrender to Krishna. Just do bhakti yoga. So, some people will say, oh, bhakti yoga is for sentimental people, but rather we should be intellectual, that's higher. Huh? But that's not what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Bhakti yoga is higher. Certainly, there is emotion there, but that is not material emotion, so therefore we cannot criticize that. Huh? The compassion that Krishna shows for the living entity and the bhakti that the devotee shows to the Lord is not material sentiment. It is actually spiritual. And it's the highest aspect of the jiva and the Supreme Lord. So therefore, this process of bhakti is recommended by Krishna, and it is the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. And in the Bhagavatam also, it's the same conclusion. So, therefore, if we are to follow scripture, we should understand very clearly the conclusion is the process of bhakti, independent of all other processes. And as a step, we can understand, yes, I'm not the body, I am the spirit, soul, etc. But understand that's not complete, and we have to go beyond that and understand that our position is to worship the Supreme Lord in devotion. And we take to the process of bhakti. So that is complete knowledge. So, here, Prabhupada quotes one verse of Atma-Tattva. To understand the nature of Atma. And he talks about self-realization. Atma means self. So that is one step. But then the other tattva is Supreme Lord. Atma can of course mean both things. It can mean jiva, it can also mean paramatma. So, just understanding that I am spiritual soul separate from the body, that's one atma tattva. The other atma tattva is to understand that jiva or atma is a servant of paramatma, Supreme Lord. So, both are necessary types of knowledge to have. And if we only have the first one, knowledge that I am the atma, not the body, that is incomplete knowledge. Certainly it's necessary, but it is only half of the knowledge. So the full knowledge to understand the nature of the Supreme Lord. So, many of the philosophers who claim to follow the Vedas will only accept the first part, not the second part, unfortunately. So the Sankhyas will accept Atma, but they won't accept Supreme Lord. Confusion is there for them. Others will accept the Supreme Lord. Nyaya philosophy, they accept Atma, Prakriti, our material nature, and Supreme Lord. But they don't have any relationship with the Supreme Lord. Oh yes, he's the cause of everything, but that's all he does. So, though people claim to follow the Vedas, we also have to see what is the real conclusion, and not simply accept these false conclusions from these other philosophies. Therefore, the conclusion is accept the Supreme Lord, accept the Jiva, and also accept the relationship with them. So even accepting the Supreme Lord is not enough. yoga philosophy does that. They accept Paramatma. Nyaya philosophy accept also. But they don't practice bhakti. So we have accept the Atma, one stage. Accept the Atma and the Supreme Lord is another stage. Accept the Supreme Lord. But that, even that's not enough. We also have to establish a relationship between the Atma and the Supreme Lord. So therefore we have to establish the process of bhakti also. So that is what is the conclusion of Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, both. Krishna says surrender everything and worship me. Take shelter of me completely. And so there's a relationship between Supreme Lord and the Jiva. Of course, many people will not surrender to the Supreme Lord because their concept of the Lord is completely different. Yes, we accept this Paramparusha, Supreme Lord in some sense. But who is he? No form, no qualities, no activities. Even Supreme Lord concept is very vague for many of these people, and therefore they don't surrender to him. So when we talk about surrender to the Supreme Lord and devotion to the Supreme Lord, implicit in that is also a different idea of who is that Supreme Lord. So therefore, not only accepting the Supreme Lord and Atma is necessary, but we also have to have a complete understanding of who is that Supreme Lord. So, the scripture also gives a conclusion there. So that Supreme Lord has a form, has qualities, he creates the material world, he destroys the material world, he has activities, he has feelings, etc. So he's actually a person. And based on that, then we establish that process of bhakti. If we don't have a details of that person or whatever, then how can we establish a relationship? A relationship with something with no form and no qualities. So what is it? No relationship. So, we have a definite form, qualities, and activities. And therefore, we have a person and we establish a relationship with that as the jiva. So this produces the bhakti. So, that complete knowledge we have to accept. Atma has different from the body. The Supreme Lord also, but the Supreme Lord also has his form, qualities, and activities, and Jiva's relationship with him. Then we have full knowledge. We can practice the process, and we can come up with the goal, which is prema, which produces pure bliss, highest bliss possible for the Jiva.
So we're getting gradual process. Some want to elevate the karma. What is the
If he does the process properly.
Automatic elevation will be?
Well, he has to endeavor. And in all the processes, they have to accept the Supreme Lord. If they don't actually elevate. So the mercy of the Lord is necessary in Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Ashtanga Yoga. Therefore, in Karma Yoga, they also have to worship Vishnu in the sacrifices. And in Jnana Yoga, if they offend the Supreme Lord, they cannot get liberation. And in Ashtanga Yoga, they must worship Ishvara Pranidhana as one of the processes, except to worship the Supreme Lord. So all these three processes also depend on their advancement, on accepting the Lord. So they can advance, but for Karma Yoga, you have to have a whole system established. Whole Varnashram system with the ideal king and the descendant of Manu, and then it can go on. Unfortunately, it's not there in Kali Yuga. There's no more Manu's descendants. So difficult to practice. And it needs to be intact for many, many generations so that you can gradually progress through the Varnas. If you don't have the Varnas intact, then you get born in the family and it's all corrupted, so you can't advance. Get to a higher Varna and it's all corrupted. What is the use? So, you need an intact Varnashram system, and so many things for Karma Yoga. Jnana Yoga, you can only do it if you're qualified by Sattva Guna already. Most people in Kali Yuga are not qualified by Sattva Guna, they cannot do it. And same with Ashtanga Yoga. So therefore, these are rejected as processes in Kali Yuga. It is not practical.
So is it right to say that Bhakti Yoga is meant for the fallen souls in Kali Yuga? Bhakti Yoga is meant for fallen souls in Kali Yuga.
It's meant for everyone in Kali Yuga, fallen or not fallen. And it's also the process in all the other yugas. So it says that in Satya Yuga, people did meditation. But it's not just impersonal meditation, it's not Stanga Yoga. It is meditation on the Supreme Lord, that is Bhakti. And when they do Homa in Treta Yuga, it is not that they do Karma Kanda. They're actually worshipping Vishnu through the Yajna. And when they do temple worship, they're not worshipping Devatas in Dwarpa Yuga, they're worshipping the Supreme Lord. So again, it's temple worship, so it's all Bhakti. Bhakti is the process in all of the yugas, but it changes its form. And Kali Yuga is Sankirtan, chanting the name of the Lord. So Bhakti Yoga is present and recommended process in all yugas. Unfortunately, the people in Kali Yuga have no qualification, so they can't meditate, they can't do sacrifices, and they even are not qualified for deity worship. So therefore, they just chant the holy name. We need knowledge, proper knowledge, of who was the Lord, who was the Jiva. We also need faith. Without that faith, then we'll get a different conclusion. Even if we read scriptures, we get a different conclusion. We'll accept the Sankhya philosophy or the Mayavada philosophy or something else. So faith is also a prerequisite by which we'll accept the scriptures of bhakti and that conclusion. And then we need the proper knowledge. And then we have the practices.